This is your friendly neighborhood ex-Muslim, Abdullah Samir. I'm joined by a new friend of mine that goes by the name of Malik Lendell. Malik is an ex-theist. I met him because I actually thought he was an ex-Muslim on YouTube, on Twitter, I mean. We have a lot of commonalities, and we thought it'd be good to have a conversation on some of the things where we intersect. So, Malik, how's it going? How's the isolation going?
Isolation is not enjoyable. That's what it is. Not enjoyable.
It's a good opportunity though. So before we get started, like you've launched your own YouTube channel. That's big, right? That's a new thing that's happening. So if for whoever's joining in, I'm joined by Malik. Malik is an ex-theist and he's launched a channel as well. He's going to be talking about atheism. So let's get into it. Tell me about your background. Like, how did you end up with being a secular humanist, or even before that, being an ex-theist? You said your family background is Christian. You live in the US, so maybe tell us a little bit about your background and how this all started. Like, let's go way back. Let's go to the beginning, like growing up in America, kind
In
of
the beginning,
deal. Genesis.
I was born Christian, and I mean, no one's really born Christian. You're taught that, but I
No,
was
wait,
born
everyone's
into a
born
Christian
Muslim though.
family.
You're Muslim. And then
Exactly.
your parents converted you to a Christian.
Right. And so I always thought of myself as like a true Christian in my earlier years. Like I was like so deep into the belief, but I didn't even know everything about it though. So I was like proud to hold on to a title that I didn't even entirely understand the meaning of, and it happens, I guess, when you are taught to associate it with, oh, being a Christian means being a good person and not necessarily associating it with the actual beliefs that entail of being a Christian. So there were a lot of things I was just ignorant of and just wasn't aware of. Like I knew, oh, I go to church every once in a while, I go to family events where we talk about God and Jesus or whatever. And I guess I didn't realize that some of the beliefs were taken literally. I did believe in God. Like that was something I believed in for sure. But some of the things I thought were more metaphorical were like people were believing in this literally. Like, for example, the whole idea of Jesus being God. I was like, oh, I thought that was metaphorical, like this whole time. And then also, as I came to learn, because I left Christianity before I left elementary school. Like, and I mean, at the time, my mother, she didn't even attend the church or anything. Like, so that made it easier to like not be associated with Christianity. Even though most of my family still are Christians or they identify as Christians, or even if they claim not to be Christians, their ideologies are still influenced by Christians. For example, like my mother, she sometimes she'll say she's not Christian, but it's like then she'll pull out the Bible and say, well, even though I don't believe in everything in the Bible, this one verse says this, this, and that. And it's like, so you're cherry picking now. But like I left Christianity for a couple of reasons. The main one was I was just becoming more conscious of sort of like other religious traditions and other just sources of knowledge. For example, my grandfather was really helpful in influencing me in that aspect. And even though I don't agree with a lot of his views, he did open me up to
What
other
was his
things.
views? What, like, where was he coming from?
So I know he was raised Christian, but I know like around the 70s, I guess he was like more like one of those 70s guys who were into sort of like this idea of Pan-Africanism and other sort of African conscious movements. And that might includes like some of the ideologies of like the Nation of Islam, for example. And
So before, I'd love to actually explore that a bit, but a lot of people don't know what the Nation of Islam is. It sounds like something to do with Islam. Can you explain what this is and why this actually matters in the Black community, in America especially, right?
Yeah, so even though I never really associated with the Nation of Islam, and I don't know everything about it, and I'm not going to pretend to know everything about it, I do know that they have influenced a lot of things in the Black community, whether you're Christian, whether you're any other religion, honestly. And for example, you can see this like with my name, for example, like my first name was given to me by my grandfather actually gave me, well, I say he gave me, he gave my mother a book of like African names and all of this. So like there's was a time where the amount of names that were Arab names and even African names too sort of surged in the Black community because of this sort of wanting to reconnect with what we perceived as our roots. And I would say that that kind of was misled in terms with like Arabic names and Islam, but it was sort of a way to sort of regain a sense of a new sort of sense of culture. And it did influence like the names of my family. Like there's a lot of people who are within my mother's generation and my generation who either if they don't have like an English or like a general English name, their name might be in like an African name or an Arabic name.
Yeah.
So,
And so the Nation of Islam is a movement that was apparently in the 1930s was started by a Black, I think it was a Black man, Elijah Muhammad. And Elijah Muhammad claimed that he saw Allah incarnate as a Black man, right?
Yeah, yes.
And so the beliefs are very, very different from mainstream Muslims, but it became this sort of movement that like, you know, with all of the racism and oppression that Blacks were experiencing in America at the time, it gained a lot of popularity because these people were saying, we are the original people. And even, you know, someone as famous, like Malcolm X, who's very, very influential and famous, was influenced by the Nation as well. So this is what you're talking about, like this cultural change that happened in America in the 30s, right?
Yes. Yeah. So... And I would say they hit their peak, I would say, around like the 60s and left some impact in the 70s too. Hence why my grandfather got involved with some of their ideology. He didn't like become involved with the Nation, but his ideas were influenced by that. And other just cultural things sort of led me to view the Nation, even though I didn't agree with their views. I was like, oh, they're a Black group. This is a cool thing, right? Even though now I'm like, I just don't stand for it.
Yeah.
But yeah, like when you look into their ideology, the person who they actually believed was the God incarnated was named Wallace Fard Muhammad. And he actually left, I believe it was like the Moorish, the Temple of Moorish, something like that.
Oh, right.
Yeah. So Wallace Fard Muhammad is the person who they believed is God in the person, as they say.
Right.
Yeah, and he supposedly left the other church or masjid, I guess, because they didn't accept his claim to divinity.
There's been other people that claim to be divine, or it's not even divine. There's been other prophets that were killed for claiming to be receiving revelation because Muhammad said, "I'm the last prophet," and you know, obviously, Ahmadis have a little bit of reinterpreted that very literally, so that they can have another, I don't know, Messiah/prophet or something, like that, right? But like, there was a guy in the Middle East somewhere that. I forget his name now, but he's the one that started the submission sect, the 19ers, the sort of Quranist group, and they don't accept hadith. And the guy was executed as a false prophet. So don't do this in the Middle East.
Oh man, no.
So carry on. So you became quite early on, you became an atheist, a skeptic, or an agnostic, however you want to put it, and then. Why is this important to you? Like, why did you want to start a channel? Like, tell me about that.
Well, I actually became an atheist last November.
Recently. Total
atheist. I was a theist for the longest. Yeah. So when I left Christianity, I didn't become an atheist. I just was like, I believe in God, and that's it, right? For right now. And for the longest, I felt like I wasted my time seeking a religion, because like I would always ask people, so what do you believe? I was just curious, because I was like, it was just, for me, it was a big thing, because I wanted this sense of having my beliefs validated, I guess. And once I came to the realization that there aren't going to, like, no religion is going to validate what I see as true, what I've realized, the way I've realized the natural world works, no religion is going to validate that for me. And I shouldn't decide to remain constricted by the identity of what a religion would provide me. You know what I'm saying?
Like, so, you don't want to be boxed by a religion, right?
Exactly.
Because you wanted to be spiritual, but not religious, kind of, right?
Yeah, I wanted that for a while. And then it came to a point where I just also wanted community, though. You know, so I did actually look into, that's one reason I did sort of look into Islam at all. And I'm glad I didn't convert, like not officially or anything. So I looked into it mostly because I had this sort of perception that maybe it was somehow culturally relevant to me, right? Mm-hmm. And I looked for a while, but you know, because I was not wanting to be boxed, it took me a while to be like, to decide whether or not I wanted to accept the beliefs, because I definitely had a lot of cognitive dissonance, and I'm like, let me stay back. Maybe it's not that bad, but let me wait it out, right?
So when was this? When did you start looking into Islam?
I would say it was more seriously in college, but like, I realized there were a lot of things that I couldn't reason with, because if I reject the reasons I rejected Christianity, I had to be consistent. And, you know, I couldn't be like, oh, well, I reject this in Christianity, but when Islam does this, it's okay. It's all fine. Like, no, yeah. I have to be consistent. And like when, for example, when I hear from apologists or other people who say like, well, you should accept this thing in Islam, and they try to explain it away, I'm like, well, if the way you're explaining it away, that could have worked in Christianity, I might as well stay Christian, right? Yeah. But,
you know, and honestly, the thing is, a lot of people would have been better off if they would have just stayed in the original religion. Like, even me as an Ismaili, Ismailism is very liberal, it's a very liberal Shia sect, I would have been better off just staying as an Ismaili, in terms of, because they're all false, right? So there's no difference. So go for the one that's actually more in line with the world, right? Islam is a little bit more, you know, we all know Islam puts more demands on you than Christianity does, right?
I would say so, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, like praying 5 times a day,
yeah,
fasting a month every Ramadan, giving I guess it's not a big deal, but giving 2.5% of your wealth as well. And like, God, that's not a big deal. Everyone should do that anyways. I mean, give some of your wealth away in charity is a good thing. Mm-hmm. But like, eating halal is another thing. And, you know, can't work in any interest or mortgages or insurance or entertainment or music or alcohol. There's so many things you cannot do as a Muslim in order to submit to Allah. And of course, many people are not true, like a lot of people will pick and choose, like you said, your mom, you know, cherry pick some of the verses. Mm-hmm. Also, right. Most people would do that as well, and they're okay with that. They're like, yeah, I know this is haram, but it's, you know, I need to do this because I need a job, or I need to feed my family, or I need to buy a house, or whatever, right? And I was like, no, this is haram, and I don't want to be in trouble with Allah. Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit more. So you started looking into Islam. Were you reading the Quran, or how did you look into it? Talking to friends, your Muslim friends, I guess.
Yeah, talking to my friends, reading the Quran with them together. It was one particular friend who really spent time making me read like with him. We would just chill out in the on one of our campus like cafes, and he would have me reading parts of it, and then also he would try to get me to watch apologists, but like most of the apologists he were into, like the what's his name? Like Muhammad Hijab and Ali Dawa. I just couldn't get with him. I'm like, yeah. I'm sure there's many other better apologists out there than these two, because they just came off as kind of, I don't want to diss them.
Antagonistic.
That was like, it just wasn't respectful to me. It didn't sound.
Oh, it's very combative.
Exactly. And I'm like, if you're trying to convince me of your beliefs, you have to come from an understanding point of view too. Mm-hmm. You know, so you can't be just attacking the other person. You have to be willing to express yourself without making it about, oh, well, you're 100% wrong. I'm going to invalidate you for what you believe in, you know?
Yeah.
So that's one thing that didn't work with me.
You know, the whole Muhammad Hijab style / Ali Dawa style, it's that sort of combative, sort of attacking. You find that. Okay, so there's two examples of this. One is Muhammad Hijab, the other one is Christian Prince. Mm. These people are very popular for a reason, because people love drama. They love, all of us, we are cheerleading our team, right? We want to see, and for the atheist team, maybe Richard Dawkins or something. I don't know, Christopher Hitchens. I never really got into Christopher Hitchens. It was before my time. Mm-hmm. But like, you know, people, they want to see the other team like smashed, like, you know, torn down, like humiliated, destroyed, right? And so when these guys come across like this, it gets viewers, because it gets people excited, right? I think it actually, I agree with you that it's the worst approach in actually convincing people. Mm-hmm. But I do think that the Dawa movement has moved into defensive mode now. Mm-hmm. It's no longer about getting people to convert, but it's about getting Muslims to stay Muslim. Right. And that's the sort of approach that's happening now. And, you know, talking to you makes me feel that the work that we're doing is so important, because there's going to be people like yourself that look into Islam and then are going to be told, you know, from all of these apologists and these videos that, hey, look, Islam is so great. Look at this. Look at that. And some of them will convert to Islam. Like, I spoke to a few people that actually converted to Islam, read some of this stuff, and then left Islam. But like, they wish they would have found out some of the stuff beforehand, right? Mm-hmm. Like yourself, thankfully you didn't convert.
Yeah, right. You didn't. And see, that's one thing about labels for me, like especially those type of labels. Like I even mentioned this on my Twitter, like I sort of feel like there's a difference between like a descriptive label versus like a prescriptive label. And I would say most religious labels are in a sense prescriptive, in the sense that they may not describe what you actually believe. Like, at least not entirely, because if you have to take on the title of a Christian or a Muslim, that means that while you may have entered because you believe a few of the things that they showed you, and you're like, oh yeah, I agree with this, there's a whole lot of other ideas that go into being a Christian or a Muslim, right? Yeah. So because there's all of these other ideas, and you already take on that identity as a Christian or a Muslim, now you have to protect these ideas that you didn't even know were there.
Yeah, so, that's such a good point.
So it's like, kind of, I feel like, is intellectually dishonest to say like, oh, well, I'm a Christian and I'm a Muslim, but yet you're claiming this whole ideology when you know only a part of it. Even the people who are raised in it, they only know like certain aspects of, they might not even read the whole Quran. So like, I think it might be more intellectually honest to say, yes, I'm a student of Islam. I'm a student of Christianity. I'm studying it, but I am not a Muslim because I don't know everything about Islam. You know, I feel like it's more intellectually honest. Yeah. But with a descriptive sort of label, like, for example, I would say being a theist or being an atheist, that's a descriptive label, because it's easy to know just the one definition. You either believe in a God or you don't believe in a God, right? So it's descriptive, and I feel like it's, even though some people try to say it's more intellectually dishonest to be more honest to be an agnostic. I hear that a lot from religious people. And I think it's ridiculous. I'll explain why a little bit later. Yeah. But
we should get into that. I want to hear your thoughts on that. But let me just say one thing. Mm-hmm. What you're saying is so true. Hassan Radwan talked about this as well, that as a Muslim, you suddenly have to defend all of these political things that have nothing to do with you. Kashmir, Palestine, Syria. Like, you have to have a stake in the Ummah. And you, really speaking, what do we know about, like, Israel and Palestine? Like, we don't really know much. Most people, let's just say, most people. Unless you're, interested in that and you look into that and you understand it and you keep up with the news. But the majority of Muslims, they have no idea. But there they are in the mosques. Oh, Allah, help the Mujahid against the oppressors in Palestine. Ameen. And they're all praying for the destruction of all of these people that they don't even know. They don't even understand. They don't really understand the context. And obviously, Israel has done a lot of bad things as well. Mm-hmm. And the Palestinians have done a lot of bad things as well. Both sides have the things. But you're expected as a Muslim that you have to automatically hold these positions, like you said, right?
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think it's just ridiculous because you're committing yourself to it all. You're not just like claiming to believe whatever you actually believe. You're claiming to believe things you don't even know about.
Yeah. And that's what Islam wants from you. It wants complete and total submission. Well, I should say that's what Muhammad wanted. Because the Quran said, accept Islam completely, right? Submit, be here and obey. Sami'na wa ata'na, which is an Arabic term that we heard all the time, hear and obey, hear and obey. That's what Islam wants from you. It wants complete and total submission. It doesn't want you to be cherry pickers, which is why I think some non-Muslims, rightfully, have a hard time accepting that Islam can be reformed, because there's a lot more of this, you have to accept it all sort of thing. In Islam, and it's perfect, and it can't, it's.
I feel like, from my experience too, there's a lot of non-Muslim people are just generally not aware of that idea either, though. There's a lot of people who are like, well, so what? It's people's beliefs, like about certain, like for example, people being homophobic. I'm like, that's a real big problem, like misogyny, homophobia. Why are we saying, oh, it's just people's beliefs and they can believe whatever they want to believe, which is okay, but why can't I critique that and why can't I critique it without it being a problem? And people saying, oh, well, it's just people's beliefs and people may not believe in that part or whatever, stuff like that. And it's like,
you're saying we should be allowed to critique Islam, is that what you're saying?
I mean, I believe we are allowed to critique it, what I'm saying? But I think culturally, some people aren't culturally, and this often comes from a lot of Christian people too, who are just unaware of how the religion works at all, or who may have very little exposure to it. And it's just a little, annoying to me, because I'm not going to pretend to be like to know everything about Islam, but I'm also not going to have you, who knows literally zip nothing, to come up to me and tell me what you don't know about, right?
Yeah.
So, it's just ignorant, because they come saying, well, you can't judge the beliefs when I know a little bit more about some of the beliefs than you do.
Yeah.
So sit down.
Yeah.
Chill out.
Yeah. So what were you saying about, I want you to actually elaborate on this. I thought that was an interesting point about it's more intellectually honest to be agnostic. What do you think about that?
So I hear this. I actually heard this from a friend of mine. We're actually planning to have a talk today, a friend of mine basically said that I shouldn't be an atheist because it's more intellectually honest to be agnostic, because I should be able to be open to the idea of a God. And my issue with that claim is, first off, are you agnostic? Are you agnostic? Wouldn't that be intellectually honest for you?
And, that's a good one.
Right. And second off, like, I think it's I forgot exactly what I was going to get at, but I think is ignorant for people to say that because they, first off, I don't think they understand the way I use agnostic versus atheist isn't necessarily exclusive.
Yeah, mutually exclusive. Right? Yeah, you know what? That's
even though I'm not an agnostic atheist, but it's not mutually exclusive.
Yeah, that's a big misunderstanding a lot of mm-hmm. people have, that they think that atheist and agnostic are like mutually exclusive, or that agnostic is like a lesser atheist or something. Right. They're not. Agnostic and Gnostic is one axis. Mm-hmm. Theist and atheist is another axis, and you could be an agnostic theist. Mm-hmm. You could be an agnostic atheist, right? I am an agnostic atheist. I'm agnostic and atheist. Mm-hmm. Some people are agnostic theists. I mean, to be honest, I think my parents would fall into agnostic theists because they believe in God, but they're like kind of skeptical about some things, and they don't accept all of the beliefs and stuff. And yet they're like believers. So they're theists. They pray to God, right? But they're sort of agnostic, because when you ask them, they're like, well, my dad used to say the funniest. He used to say, how do you know God's not a big black man? He used to say that to me. I was so offended when he said that, because I was Muslim. I'm like, how dare you say that? He was just kidding. But the point is, he's like, you don't know what God is. Like, what do you think? You think you guys, like, he was right. Like, we mm-hmm. so elegantly think that we know exactly what God is, and we've like, you know, painted this mental picture, and but it's, we don't actually know, right? And that's what his point was. So he was an agnostic theist, and I think that's a good perspective. I think Hassan Radwan is a good example of this. He fluctuates between agnostic theist, agnostic atheist as well, mm-hmm. but either way is agnostic. But it's not, there is such a thing as a weak atheist. I call myself a weak atheist, which means I'm willing to consider the possibility that there's a God if evidence comes to me, but I'm just not convinced because I haven't seen any evidence. And I don't necessarily think we need to posit an existence of a God. Again, mm-hmm. it just gets into a whole can of worms when you start talking about God, yeah. because what is God? Like, what does that even
exactly.
mean?
Exactly. And that's one thing. I don't really like to entertain the term God necessarily. I really dislike the term because it's really vague, and it's a meaningless term. Like, there was a video, I actually discussed the video on my YouTube channel, and it was Shannon Q was discussing with TMM about ichthyism, basically. And basically, I realized that was the identity that I had that I didn't know I had, I guess. Basically, ichthyism is the idea that the term God itself is inherently incoherent and basically meaningless. And so I realized that was why I consider myself a Gnostic atheist. And the reason I do so is because I see that the ideas of God as propagated by all of the religions that I've ever seen propagated this sort of idea of a God that it was illogical in the sense that it had existential contradictions, which I feel like are reason enough to actually be able to say, well, these gods aren't real, you know, because if it has an existential, if there's a contradiction in its character, or if there's a contradiction in the way its nature works within the world, then why am I believing in this God, right? It's obviously not real. But then when you think of the idea of a God outside of the context of a religion, what does that even mean? Without the religion defining what that God is, because there have been so many different religions that define gods in so many different ways. Take, for example, like Greek gods, they were these anthropomorphic beings, and we're able to prove that they don't exist. We could be Gnostic about them because they don't live on Mount Olympus, do they? Right? Yeah. And same with, I feel like it's the same with like the idea of the omnipotent, omnibenevolent, tri-omni-God and all that. Yeah. And then I know other people try to put forth other ideas of other sorts of gods, like with deism, like the whole idea of, I guess, I might be wrong on my definition slightly, but basically like the idea of a God that doesn't interact with our world, just sort of creates the things that exist. But then it's like, couldn't we just, like, that still doesn't really define God, in my opinion. That's just like saying, like, it could have been a force, it could have been an entity. It's still like no actual meaning behind that term, in my opinion. It's just like, if we can't, like, I feel like we are just saying the unknown is God, essentially. You know what I'm saying? And why can't we just say, oh, it's unknown? Why can't we just say we don't know, it's the unknown? And then even with pantheism, it's like, oh, the universe is God. And it's like, then it's just a synonym.
Yeah.
So that's why I consider myself Gnostic atheist. I would prefer if people, like, I usually don't try to engage with people who just use the term God generally, because it means nothing to me. Like, you have to give it a context. You have to define what you mean by God, because of all of these other contexts in which it means, it's just so vastly different that the term is basically meaningless.
Yeah.
So, I think, like, when people do mention, like, oh, yeah, I'm talking about the biblical God, I got you. I will show you some contradictions.
Yeah.
You know? But that's why I consider myself a Gnostic atheist, but also an ichtheist, because that's where my reasoning for denying the idea of a God existing outside of even religion comes from.
Yeah, absolutely. For me, I find that this is actually a diversion tactic used by many Muslims when they're discussing with me, is they will always go back to, let's talk about whether God exists. And this God is this, like, nebulous sort of, like, God, like, what God is this, right? And then, so what I normally say is, I straight up say, I'm willing to concede that a God exists. Now let's talk about Islam, because the Muslims, right? So they don't really care whether God exists. They care about God that spoke to Muhammad, that has certain characteristics. He gets angry, and he has, like, you know, he involves himself in creation, like you said, like the biblical God. And then we can actually talk, like, real shit, because otherwise it's just mental masturbation. It's just like, we're just, like, making up stuff. Like, it feels like that. Like, it just feels like the first being that ever existed. Everything has a cause, and, you know, it's just like, who is convinced by these, like, philosophical arguments for God's existence? Like,
right, for me, it doesn't do much, because it's like, you're not really promoting your religion anyways. And even so, like, because of my view of how I perceive the word God, it's just the fact that people sort of use this term to mean just whatever they need it to mean. And you can say, oh yeah, God created the universe. Well, this God, what do you mean? Like, if we want to say there was something before the Big Bang, like, then, and it can be scientifically proven, for example, then are we going to call that God? You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Are we going to call, like, just whatever is the onset of the Big Bang, for example, God, even if it maybe didn't fit our preconceived notions of what a God would be? Or are we going to then be like, oh, well, God started that, right? Are we going to be like, God created that thing? Yeah. So I think it's really, it's just a weird term. And then when you talk about, like, there had to be a God that created the universe, it's like, well, a lot of people will play around with that term, and some people will be like, oh, well, God is this force that brings the universe into existence. And it's like, then you're just making God sort of synonymous with this idea of the universe's existence basically being set forth.
Yeah.
And so I think it's really a lot of playing around with just terminology and language, and it's just ridiculous to me. I don't think a lot of people are gonna ever really understand where I'm coming from with that sort of perception. But I've thought about this, like, ever since I really became an atheist. Like, it really just became very pertinent to me, because I stopped believing instantly, day and night. I was like, I started questioning, of course, and then I was like, well, I'm atheist. It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah. We're on the same page. That I think when I first left Islam, in fact, in my very first video, I was like, right at the end of the video, I actually got cut off and ran out of space on the card or something. I said there might be a force out there or something like that. But since I made that video 5 years ago, especially because of Matt Dillahunty, I have to say, and his Atheist Experience show, where people call in and they challenge him and like on the air he responds to them, I was blown away. I was like, wow, like there actually is no good reason to believe in a God. And so it just became like, I didn't even need to say deism is a possibility anymore, because it just doesn't seem viable, right? It's like you said, there's more contradictions there. However, for the sake of argument, I am willing to do that, because I think it just gets to the point, because I don't feel like you're really helping anyone. As for me specifically, I'm not helping anyone if I spend all my time debating whether God exists, whereas that makes no difference to our lives. Assuming, let's say, they convince me that there is a God, but Islam's false. So what was the point of that world conversation? Like, okay, so God exists. So what? Like, if he never spoke to us, he maybe doesn't even have a personality. Maybe it's like a force or something, like you said. He's irrelevant. So whether they're atheist or deist, for all intents and purposes, they're the same for human beings.
Right.
There's no difference to us, right?
But I would say, like, why would we label it God instead of a force? You know what I'm saying? So I think the term itself is just not a good term to use. It's really a trash term. It just doesn't mean much inherently.
It's too vague. You're right. And that's why we have to sort of, like you said, the triune, you know, like people have to say the classical theism definition. And again, it gets so technical that I think you lose most of the audience, and like people are just kind of like tune out at that point, and it's just no point. I mean, the real question is, did God send revelation? Not whether God exists. I don't know about you, but from my perspective, I mean, some people think this is kind of weird, but I used to believe in God because I thought the Quran was true. Not because I believed in God, just because I believed in God, because I said, okay, this must be, because this is true, therefore he must exist because he communicated to us. And then as I started to see problems in the book, now I'm like, well, I don't have a good reason to believe in God. The trees and the stars and, okay, yeah, the trees and the stars are beautiful and all that. But there's a lot of cruelty in nature too. There's like, there's like rape, and there's like, among animals, there's like animal suffering and human suffering and cancers and disease. And now Christians will say all of that happened post-fall, after the flood, right? After the flood, suddenly cancer started. No, we have evidence that there was cancer even before. I mean, there's no flood anyway. But it's like the hadith of Muhammad that said, there's a funny hadith that says, because of the sins of Bani Israel, the children of Israel, the Jews, meat rots. And because of the disobedience of wives to the husband. He just threw that in there. He had to throw in a little thing about, you know, attacking women too. But it's so hilarious because it's so unscientific. A true prophet should not open his mouth and say dumb things like that. Like, you could just not say anything. Oh, why does meat rot? I don't know. I just don't know. Fine, you don't know. You're a prophet. No one asks you to talk about why meat rots. But then when Muhammad comes and talks about things that have no relevance, he's setting himself up for failure in the future, assuming he actually said that. And we're going based on the basis that that hadith is actually true, but it might not be true. But if it's not true, then we don't even need to accept anything whatsoever. So when you were looking into Islam, you had discussions with your friends. What ended up tipping the scale so that you didn't end up being Muslim?
Well, I would say there were a lot of things. Like, the main one was I actually had a class where we had to read a part of the Quran, and they had us read part of the Bible too. And it happened to be, I guess, one of the more unfavorable verses that my friend would have never shown me. But I was reading it, and I was like, I asked my friend if he wanted to read it with me. And so we were going through it, and then I'm saying, it was An-Nisa. And it was Surah An-Nisa.
Oh, An-Nisa,
I was going through it, and I'm saying a lot of interesting things about not hitting people in the face and all this other stuff. And I saw like it was like the half testimony thing, and I just couldn't get behind it for real. I was trying to hold on and have, you know, that cognitive dissonance, right? Because I'm like, well, my friend, he's a cool dude, he's smart and all this, I have to trust him, right? And I was reading it, and I'm like, this doesn't make any sense. And they were insisting, like, they were trying to say, well, we have to keep in mind, we have roles to play and this and that, and we're equal, but we have different roles. And I'm like, this ain't equal, right? But that was one thing that threw me off. But also, as I learned more about, like, Because one of the reasons, one of the many reasons I rejected Christianity, for example, was slavery, right? It was slavery. And I know people try to say, well, biblical slavery was not the same as the transatlantic slave trade, right?
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter for me because it's just slavery.
Yeah.
Like, no matter what type of slavery it is, no matter how kind you think slave owners
were. they actually say that, the biblical slavery.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's people actually say that.
That's the same thing Muslims say all the time.
Right.
Islamic slavery is better. It's not real slavery. It's indentured
servitude. It's like, I don't want your indentured servitude either. like it's just, and some people try to say, oh, well, slaves have more rights. Well, I even specified this in a video, one of the videos I did, like, it's not about having more rights. It's what they're really doing is they're taking away maybe less rights. In your view, they're taking away less rights. So let's not reword it, because like people, we have sort of a baseline of, I guess, freedom. We're right here, right?
Yeah.
But then when you're saying, when you say that they are taking more rights than, like, let's say we have other slaves here, and then Muslim slaves are here, their rights are still being taken. They just have fewer rights taken from them. So let's not play that game of slaves have more rights. Let's say you could say they maybe had fewer rights or different rights taken away from them. But let's not play that game of they have more rights. I find that very dishonest and disgusting, in my opinion. You're still justifying slavery. And you're like, when I heard that from my friend and other Muslim apologists, I'm like, this is, y'all just as bad as the Christian apologists, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Like, let's not support this. Like, and it's funny because they will be like, Christians and Muslims alike will go after each other on the slavery thing. They'll be like, well, they did this and this, they promote this. And it's like, it's all bad. It's all messed up. Let's not promote it either way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The interesting thing is, I really love that Mufti Abu Layth has a video where he actually laughs and he mocks people that say slavery is good or this Islamic slavery is good. He's like, owning another human being is good. Like, and then he's just laughing. He's like, come on, like, really, like capturing someone's daughter and making her your slave or the son. You think that's a good thing? Like, how is that a good thing?
Right.
And some Muslims will say, well, at that time, you know, that what else would you do with those people? Well, didn't you also say Muhammad used to free slaves? So make up your mind. Is it that there's nothing else you could do with them? Then why are you freeing them?
Mm-hmm.
Why was he freeing them? Why is he saying it's good to free slaves? He was freeing slaves, and you're saying, oh, look, he's such a good guy. He's freeing slaves. Mm-hmm. He's trying to get rid of slavery. Yet he
failed at getting rid of slavery, obviously. Someone tried to pull that on me.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, slavery in most Islamic societies, like the last, I believe there was one country that might have just banned it in like 2008. I forgot which country it was, but like most others did so like in the early 1900s, I believe. But like they were saying, well, He tried to get rid of slavery, and the Quran was successful in that, I believe they said. And it was like, no, there's obvious proof that it wasn't successful.
Yeah.
And like, even I'm not trying to say the transatlantic slave trade was good, but it did. It started and ended before Islamic slave trade started and ended.
You know, I remember this was in university. I was, I don't know, 20 or something, like 20 years old. And I remember a fierce debate between Muslims. There was two Muslims. One of them was, he was being influenced by Hizb ut-Tahrir, an Islamist organization. And the other one was just another, like, he was a Sufi Muslim, right? And they had a huge debate about whether slavery was still halal. Because the Hizb ut-Tahrir guy was saying, you can't make it haram. It's not haram in the Quran. Muhammad never made it haram when he died. He made riba haram. He said, today I've, you know, forbidden riba and blah, 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 and all the debts that are due were done. Muhammad never did that. So technically, you could make an argument, and that's what they're making, that slavery is not haram to this day. Now, there is a there is a good point that we have to make, which is, like, to be fair, that under Islam, Islam limits the sources of slavery to those. Okay, well, it's not that much better, but you can't kidnap someone and make them your slave. Okay, yay! But you can still capture them in war, make them your slave, and you can still buy and sell them. So like, it's not really that much better. You just can't kidnap people. Like the story of Joseph, he was kidnapped from the well and he became a slave. That's not allowed anymore. So progressive religion. Right. You cannot kidnap people anymore, but you can still capture them in war and buy and sell them on the market. Like, okay, whatever, right? Mm-hmm. And obviously we all know that ISIS is doing slavery in a lifetime. Mm-hmm. And they are an example of an Islamic group, Boko Haram. And obviously they don't represent the majority of Muslims, but the fact is, I mean, under Christianity, like a lot of that stuff was in the Old Testament, and I don't really understand well enough whether you could argue whether slavery was even allowed or not. I don't get it. Like, I don't, like with the Quran, it's clear. It's like halal, haram, it's in the Quran and the Hadith. With Christianity, this whole thing came with Paul, and he like got rid of all of the old laws and stuff, you know? So could you like, but the thing is, the slave owners, they use the Bible.
Yeah, exactly. And they even, there was a point where they, I believe they pick and chose, like they didn't show all the verses in the Bible or all the books, I believe, from what I understand. I'm still studying that actually, like doing research on that. But like my main reason for like, not my only, but one of my main reasons for rejecting Christianity was because of slavery, but also because of a recognition of my heritage and cultural identity, and realizing like my ancestors, not all of them were Christian. So why? How am I going to reason my sort of identity with this religion that doesn't necessarily connect to my identity and my pride of being a person who has African ancestry? Like, I have other ancestry, but that's besides the point. I'm more concerned with my African ancestry, right? And like, also, like, it was definitely a cultural, a very cultural reason why I even questioned religion and started looking into other religions. I forgot. Can you repeat what you were saying?
Yeah, we're talking about how in Christianity, to me, it's not clear how, what's allowed and what's not allowed, because Old Testament, New Testament dichotomy.
Yeah, I think I would say for me, like I know a lot of Christians try to say, oh, well, this, all of this is irrelevant because it's in the Old Testament. We follow the New Testament now, which honestly, I think it's stupid. Like, why do we have the Old Testament then? What's the point of it? Why are we looking in it? Like, it just doesn't make sense to me. And then also, like, because I'm aware of also the history of how these things came into being, when you learn like the actual history of like how these stories were passed along to the, and like where the origins of these stories were, you become also aware of like the fact that, well, first off, these stories aren't unique. Like, there's a story, like the Dogon mythology is similar to, very similar to the story of Adam and Eve. And my grandfather, he made me study Dogon culture because, you know, have to keep that, he wanted me to be culturally aware of my African heritage, I guess. Yeah. So he had me studying the Dogon people, and I read their mythology, and basically it's very similar to, it has differences, of course, from the Adam and Eve story, but like in the sense that there was a creation with both man and woman, and then, but the difference is that there was another creation of, it was like a double creation too. Like, first he created a man and woman kind of, but he made a mistake. so then they were like these, so I guess, deformed beings, and then he started over and remade man and woman. So it was interesting to see that similarity. And when you realize that Christianity is not unique. Christianity tries to portray itself as unique, and it's not. And it's that's why I had to reject, like, even though the Old Testament is sort of seen as false, it's also still seen as the base, one of the basics of Christianity. Like, if you don't accept it, then like you can't really call your, maybe some people call themselves Christian, but you, like just rejecting it and being like, oh, all of that's fake and is folklore is, I find it really strange. And I know there's a lot of Christians or I don't know if they call themselves Christians, but people who call themselves like Jesus followers. And I'm all for, like, if you want to follow the ideologies I still consider Jesus, like, not necessarily someone who we can know to exist. Mm-hmm. So I would say if you want to follow someone who at best is a myth, because you like what they stand for, that's fine and all, but like, let's not pretend like we have factual evidence of his existence.
Yeah.
You know? And
so you're a mythicist. So you follow like Richard Carrier and you're on the side of like Jesus didn't exist at all.
I'm not on the side of Jesus didn't exist. I'm on the side of he definitely wasn't God. Okay. You know, he definitely wasn't God. I'm not going to say he doesn't exist. I'm going to say we don't have good reason to assume he did based on some of the information that I've been shown. Like most of it is just like hearsay. And mm-hmm. I get it. Like that might be the most we ever get, you know?
Yeah.
But in the end, for me, just because even if Jesus exists, that doesn't prove that he was a God. And it definitely doesn't prove that the Abrahamic God is true. It just proves that there was some old guy from back then who may or may not have claimed to be a God. Maybe the books got it wrong. I don't know.
Yeah.
But,
So for me, I really like Bud Ehrman, and he studied this his whole life, and he's one of many. But he's an atheist that believes that, or agnostic, I guess I should say agnostic atheist, that believes that Jesus was a messianic rabbi that basically was killed because of what he was preaching, which was that he was the Messiah. And, you know, some people decided to kind of, you know, make that, it became a political thing. It became an issue with the political regime at the time, because Messiah is a political statement. Saying I'm the Messiah, it means I'm going to be the leader. It's a political statement, and so he was killed for that. Now, when he was killed, this became a crisis because, according to Jewish mythology, Messiah is the king. He's not supposed to be slaughtered by his enemies and hung on a cross, which is the most humiliating way of dying, right? So he was supposed to be the Messiah, not mm-hmm. hung on a cross like a criminal. Those were criminals that were hung on the cross, mm-hmm. like robbers and murderers, like not honorable people, right? So this was a crisis of faith, and so based on this, they decided to invent the new idea of the New Testament, which was Jesus died for our sins.
Right.
So they flipped the whole thing, and he became this, you know, hero, the savior. And of course, the earliest sources that we have, the Gospels, are like 60, 70 years after he died. Like it's like not at all reliable. And then we have to believe that based on supposedly 100 people that saw him raised from the dead, all of us are supposed to worship him. All of us, billions of people, are supposed to believe that based on this weak, you know, like evidence that supposedly a bunch of people saw this guy raised from the, it's not even like from 100 years after this death or 70 years or whatever. Like it's so ridiculous, right? It's just like, so talking about, going back to Islam, so the whole thing with Islam and slavery, it's not a done deal, in my opinion. I think there's no real right and wrong, which is why, again, you know, when you find people cherry pick, a lot of Muslims will cherry pick and they'll mm-hmm. say, well, Islam doesn't allow, the scholars say slavery is now haram. Okay, well, scholars can say whatever they want. It's like, whatever, man. It's up. If you want that, I'm happy for you. Like, mm-hmm. I want you to believe that, like, whether I mean, I don't believe Islam is true at all, but if you're going to believe in anything, I would rather you believe in an Islam that has a haram slavery.
Right.
But the problem is we always go back to the texts, and the texts will always lead you back to the slavery thing being halal, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem with Islam. And, you know, someone was saying Revelation 22:13 is saying, oh, look, these two atheists talking about what they don't believe instead of what they believe. Let's talk a little bit about what we do believe.
Okay.
So you're a secular humanist. What does that mean to you? Like, what do you believe about that? Like,
so I believe that just all people deserve rights so long, like just the maximum amount of freedom without embarging upon other people's freedoms, basically, but also sort of trying to grow our humanity together as group forming secular sort of communities. Like, and when I say secular communities, I don't mean just atheists and agnostics alone. I mean everyone despite their religious beliefs and all, but using the connecting based on our humanity and our shared human experiences. Because like there was actually this video I watched, I believe it was like, it was on Richard Dawkins Foundation YouTube channel. And there was sort of this discussion about sort of this idea of spirituality as an atheist. And I thought it was an interesting video, and it even connected to some articles I've read before, which sort of differentiated spirituality from religion. And it did help me open up a little bit more to the idea of spirituality, because at first I was like, oh, this is just BS, it's just stupid stuff. But from the definition they provided, which was the idea of having this connection with fellow humans and with the world we live in, I'm like, okay, I can understand that. It's puts a word to this idea of being connected and this interconnectedness with our being and our universe, and just being able to admire the world for what it is. Like, for example, I think science is a great way to bring us to that understanding. Like, I know a lot of people think science is like the static, oh, well, here's one truth and that's it. But what I like, the science, when I refer to science, I'm discussing the sort of changing dynamic understandings of the world and how we are brought further into getting closer to the truth, even if we won't know everything. But that's the excitement, right? That's the excitement. We're getting closer, and we're not there yet, but we think we're getting closer and closer, and it's just going to be this exciting ride to get to, right? And it brings you more questions, and it's just so exciting to me. But that's, I believe in sort of that exhilaration formed from understanding our world further and understanding fellow human beings and just being able to connect with other people. That's like, I just really enjoy that. And it just makes my life so much more meaningful.
And what do you think about morality? How do you come up with morality as a secular humanist?
So my sense of morality is based mostly in the idea of, we're human beings, and we're social beings naturally. Like, we're biologically social beings. We have to have some way to be able to work socially while, like, we have to have some way to work socially with some rules, basic rules on how we're going to best make a society for us. And I believe religion may have had a role, or certain religions may have had a role in sort of building this idea of, oh yeah, we get together socially and building that culture to sort of bring people to rally around it. But I also believe there is a thing such as secular morality, in the sense that, like, all human beings have the ability to be empathetic. At least, or most human beings, let me clarify, most human beings have the ability to be empathetic. There is an article, I'll have to share that with you later, but there is an article actually that discusses like the part of the brain that deals with empathy. And for me, empathy should be the base of morality. Like, any morality that is not based in empathy is just based in controlling other people. Like, that's how I view it, because if you're not being empathetic towards someone's experience, if you're not understanding how someone else's experience is, and instead you're impacting their experience negatively, then that sort of goes against my idea of people being able to express their full rights, with the exception of not harming other people or impacting other people negatively. So that would be where the empathy part comes in. But having sort of this standard, because most people have the capacity of empathy, we are able to put people in place who lack that ability. We're able to put them in place because we're in that society. And it's the same within religious structures. There's people who may lack that those connections in that part of the brain, regardless of their religion or irreligion, we have it regardless. But because we're in that community, because that community itself has the ability to put those people in check, or it may, sometimes it may not have that ability, then people either are going to be put in check, right? Or they're not if they don't have that sort of enforcement from the community. And I believe that one of the reasons some people might view non-believers as, oh, well, they can't have such thing as morality because they need it from some God. I think they're connecting too much of that ability, their ability to empathize with their God. They have little, I feel like they don't really trust themselves to be truly moral without this God or this text or whatever it is, when I'm sure like this person is not going to, if they were to lose their belief, I'm sure they're not going to go out and just go on a murder spree or anything. I'm pretty sure, I have very much belief in this person that they won't do that. And I believe in believing in what I can see. Like, I'll believe in people. I'm not going to believe in a God. It may be irrational to believe in people sometimes, but at least I can see them, right?
Yeah. Totally. I like how you said that. And I have an article as well, which I wrote on atheism and morality. And I say similarly that, you know, human thriving is a basis of solid morality. If your actions lead to the further thriving of humans, then this would be moral. If it leads to harmful consequences, it'd be immoral. We share a lot of things with animals. A lot of people don't realize that this is where we get it from, that you know, empathy and stuff like this actually evolve, even in similar animals. Animals have empathy as well, right? In different aspects and different amounts. Obviously, we have a rationality which goes above that, but nevertheless, this is, we do have this. So I have an article on that. I'm not gonna go too much into that because people can read that if they want to. I wanted to share your channel. Here's your channel, and whoever is tuned in now, we're coming up to the end of the conversation. I'm talking to Malik Landell, an ex-theist, grew up in America, and he has a lot of interesting stuff. He just started a channel, so please check it out. Do you wanna just mention anything about your channel? So please subscribe to his channel if you're new here. You're gonna find a lot of interesting content coming up over the next few days. We are in a quarantine, global quarantine, so if you're looking for something to watch, I really like the fact that you have a good setup already. And you know, provocative trailer. And would you like to say anything else about that, about the channel?
Yeah, so on my channel, I'm not gonna only discuss like atheism. I'm planning to also discuss like politics and what I find interesting about like being a Black person in America, the idea of Black identity. And there's gonna be so many other things that I'm just interested in talking about. So like, I'm gonna discuss all of that. It's gonna be exciting. Be ready.
Awesome. Sounds good. So we're coming up to the end now. I've shared Malik's channel and his Twitter as well. It's in the description. And so do check out Malik. Thank you so much for joining. Do you want to make any final comments before we go? So we've talked a lot. We didn't get to go too much into the whole identity, right. Black identity thing, which I was hoping to. But we can have another chat on that. You're mainly active on Twitter and YouTube, I guess, now. That's it? Or anybody else you want to share?
Twitter, Instagram. I don't really share a lot of like stuff on my Instagram except on my stories.
Okay.
So like if you want to follow me on Instagram, same as my Twitter handle. Okay. I just have, you know, dope photography, you know. But yeah, like feel free to follow me on Twitter if you want to get in touch with me. That's where I'm sharing the most of my thoughts.
Sounds good. Okay, so yeah, like I was just saying, we've chatted a lot on Twitter. Malik and I are co-discussionists, I guess, whatever you want to call it. We're like battling the Islamic apologists online together. So do check out, if you're on Twitter, I'm more active on Twitter nowadays. I guess everybody's more active online nowadays, but more than Facebook even, because I find there's a little bit more of an audience on Twitter. Mm-hmm. There's more potential there. Facebook is a little bit more limited, and Facebook tends to censor a lot more. So, you know, we can be a little bit funny and joke around and shoot the shit on Twitter and not get in not get banned, which I appreciate that. I appreciate the fact, I appreciate YouTube as well for allowing us to host such content and to have these discussions. And thank you everyone for joining, and stay tuned. We'll have Malik on here again at some point. And do check out his channel. Do definitely check out his channel, The Black Atheist, Malik Lendell, on skepticism, apostasy, religion, and more. I'm glad you launched your channel. Now you can, you know, start it with a blast, and I'm going to be subscribing as well. And there we have it. Okay, thank you, everyone, and we'll see you again sometime.